Welcome to the Eye on College Football podcast brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace recently launched the latest version of their platform, Squarespace 7. It has a completely redesigned interface, integrations with Getty Images and Google Apps. There's 15 new templates and an incredible feature called Cover Pages. Try the new Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter the offer code FUN at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, start here, go anywhere. Welcome back. It's time for another rewind edition of the Eye on College Football podcast. I am Chip Patterson, joined by Tom Fornelli. Hello, Tom. How is your Sunday afternoon going?
Oh, it's going wonderful. You know, the Bears are on their way to the Super Bowl. Everything's great.
They made it interesting against Tampa Bay.
They won.
Yes, that is exciting. Now, the Bears fans, are you conflicted when you see a team win? Because I think there are several times this weekend where we saw fan bases have that conflicted feeling of a win that you want to get excited about, but big picture, the season is already going to fall below your expectations. I know that the Bears didn't necessarily have Super Bowl expectations, but you know, in the last couple weeks, it looked like one of the most... You know, a lot of people were laughing at Bears fans. I don't think we talked about this. What were you feeling at this time?
Well, I mean, they're a bad team.
Yeah.
And in the last 2 weeks, they've played worse teams, and they were able to beat those worse teams. And now they're 5-6, and they're going to play some more bad teams and probably win those games and then lose to all the good teams.
There's
pretty much how it's going to go.
Like, there's something about being erratic, middle of the road, going to, like, you're going to look really, really good, and then there's going to be the Packers game.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're thoroughly mediocre, and that's the thing, though. They haven't looked really good, even in the wins against the Vikings and the Buccaneers today. It's not, I mean, I think they had 204 yards of offense.
Mm.
So, you know.
So there's that. If you want more NFL coverage, definitely listen to Ryan Wilson and Will Brinson. Those guys don't shower very much, but they do put on a very good podcast. It is like...
Stink like hell.
It is close. You know, I'd get it after hours. Listen to ours first, then listen to theirs, of course. Tom, I want to begin. Week 13, not you know, going into the weekend, we said cherish every little bit of it, but there were some stinkers this Saturday, and that's okay. You know, there wasn't going to be a ton of shakeup. I think UCLA-USC, a game that we will get to later, being, in my opinion, one of the only real headline, you know, change the big picture type results. But a big one would be Florida State and Boston College. The bigger story if Florida State loses, instead, once again, this is another close win by 6 points or less. And man, we talked last week, Tom, about Florida State playing the villain role in this year in college football, and that there's a lot of fans that are almost becoming, you know, best friends, dogs and cats living together, you know, rival fans getting together and uniting over this dislike for Florida State. As the polls were released on Sunday, our friend Jerry Hinnan even suggested that the disdain for Florida State is just playing out in the polls as well. And I mean, I don't understand why so many people are this emotionally invested, because as Boston College put together almost a 9-minute drive in that fourth quarter, driving down the field, setting up a field goal that would have been, you know, to go ahead 20-17 for the Eagles, the field goal misses, and man, people were really hurt. Didn't you see this? Like people are emotionally invested in Florida State losing, and the fact that Florida State, as you know, we've kind of casually said, they're trolling everyone, and everyone's falling for it. You and I like to see, you know, the unpredictable happen, but at this point, it is shocking to see how many people are actively rooting against Florida State. For some, whether it's, what is it, a moral reason or a big, like, cosmic reason? What is it, Tom? Why are people loving to root against Florida State?
Because it's like we've discussed, they're the villain, and everybody likes rooting against the villain. I mean, they've won how many straight games now?
27.
27?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, when a team's won 27 straight games, you're kind of sick and tired of the story. And like you said, they're playing so many close games and getting people's hopes up. And you're like, yes, they're finally going to lose. Ha ha. Ah, you sons of, you know, and they win again.
Right.
And I do think it's hilarious that the coaches poll, Florida State dropped to number 2 because, you know, it needed a last second field goal to beat Boston College. And I guess Alabama struggling with Western Carolina for a first half was, you know, enough to convince the coaches that Alabama's clearly better than Florida State. So I think that just kind of shows you the level of disdain for the Seminoles right now, because even with a win over a decent team, it's not like Boston College sucks.
It's a bowl team. It's a bowl team that beat USC.
Yeah, it killed USC too. And it's like they valued Alabama's win over Western Carolina more than Florida State's win over Boston College, which is just the dumbest thing in the world. That's where we sit.
That's where we sit. All right. Did you get much eyes, or did you have any specific takeaways from Florida State, Boston College? We've got the ACC kind of split up throughout the show. Listeners know we normally like to tackle things conference by conference, but we have a couple headlines and some conference title race stuff. So is there anything that stood out to you from this game?
Well, I saw a lot of the comparisons this weekend where people are starting to compare this Florida State team to the 2012 Notre Dame team that went 12-0 with a lot of close calls. And yeah, I'm starting to see that myself, although I think Florida State would probably handle itself better in its first playoff game, even if I don't expect it to win whoever it ends up playing, probably in Oregon or somebody. But yeah, this is a team that I think is going to get to the playoff, and it's not going to lose until it gets there. So at that way, you can look at it as, you know, you should kind of want them to keep winning, because wouldn't it hurt more for them to lose in the playoff than to not get to the playoff at all if you're Florida State?
A loss in the semifinals or even a loss in the national title game would feel like a more proper ending to this story. To at least have them go up against... Now, the hilarious ending is for Paul Johnson to do this in Charlotte in the ACC championship game. But an ending, you know, going up against an Oregon, going up against an Alabama, TCU, Baylor, Ohio State, one of these other teams at the top, you know, all of the fans from the rest of, even you could say down to top 8, are screaming, our team is better than Florida State right now. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's everyone feels like in that top group that they are better than Florida State. And so I would at least like to see on the field Florida State against another conference champion.
Yeah. And I mean, I think they all have reasonable arguments to make that they could say their teams are better than Florida State. But until somebody actually beats Florida State, it doesn't really mean a damn thing, does it?
No, it doesn't. All right. So we'll get back to the ACC. But we want to, of course, tip our hats to Samaje Perine. Melvin Gordon stunned us, blew us away by taking down LaDainian Tomlinson's record, which stood for almost 15 years, and it didn't last 15 days. Samaje Perine gets out here in, Tom, what I think is the perfect storm of events, because with Trevor Knight still out because of his horrible, you know, that spine injury that he suffered, you've got Cody Thomas playing quarterback. It's raining. It's horrible conditions. And I think regardless of how productive Samaje Perine was, he was going to get the ball 35 times. Like, that was just going to be the game plan going into this game against Kansas. Then Kansas helped things by just really not even trying to tackle at the second level. That's what I saw. I know you might have gotten closer eyes on it. What do you think? Go ahead.
Perine was getting a lot of long runs without being touched for the most part. I mean, the holes were huge, and then the second level wasn't there. And you're right, because Cody Thomas had a bad game yesterday. He was only 3 for 13. But I feel bad for Perine. First of all, he had 5 touchdown runs, okay?
Okay.
One was for 49 yards. One was 33. One was 34. One was 66. One was 27. He didn't have a touchdown run shorter than 27 yards. And he rushed for 427 yards in a game. But at the same time, it's kind of like, because Melvin Gordon just did it last week.
Okay, so you feel worse for Samaje Perine than you do for Melvin Gordon, the guy who broke the record. He didn't, because Melvin Gordon didn't play in the fourth quarter. Melvin Gordon finds out about it in the post game after the victory against Iowa and has this look on his face like, oh, Well, congrats to that guy. And then, you know, in the back of his head, he's like, damn, if I'd played in the fourth quarter, I definitely would have had 430.
Oh, yeah. You know, he was telling, you know, he's telling Gary Anderson, should have played me in the fourth quarter, coach.
Well, Samaje Perine becomes the first player in FBS history to get 200 yards in the first half and 200 yards in the second half. Like, he had it just full play to work, four quarters. Samaje Perine is going to run the ball right at Kansas until Kansas stops him, and they didn't once.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, what really was strange to me, though, was because Kansas the last few weeks had been playing pretty feisty football, and on defense in particularly, it was starting to look, you know.
Hey, they gave TCU troubles, like one of the best offenses in the country. Yeah, I'm with you.
They were playing well the last few weeks, and then they just weren't there. And it's, you knew what Oklahoma was doing. You could have just stuffed the box, and even though I mean, Oklahoma's offensive line was just killing them. I mean, the holes Perine was running through were like, you know, 3 feet wide.
Yeah, they would start. And then, like, it would almost look as though it was just their wide splits because they had just moved everything to the side and it was just a wide open alley.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was the easiest 427 yards anybody's ever going to rush for, put it that way.
How long do you think the record stands?
Is there a game on Tuesday night this week?
All right. Well, okay, so this gets to my bigger picture. Do you believe that this, you know, recent burst of huge rushing performances, and there have been multiple players over 200. You know, last week we had the players go over 300. Western Kentucky running back, and of course Tevin Coleman has another huge day against Ohio State. You know, last year we made a big deal about Andre Williams breaking 2,000. We might get two players at 2,000 this year. I am a believer of a lot of the pendulum theories with trends, and do you think that this recent resurgence of these huge rushing performances is the snapback from spreading the field 53.5 yards wide and trying to create all of these weird mismatches, spread the defense thin, and after everyone was trying to pass, now everyone wants to run out of that scenario?
It could be. I don't know for sure. I think it's just a year where there's a lot of running back talent. But no, to your point, yesterday there were 9 running backs who rushed for 200 yards. 9.
Yeah, you spend so much time, like, you know, in recruiting and big picture trends. Like, the linebackers were getting smaller. The linebackers were getting smaller. And I remember Felder and I were at one of those, like, Nike coaches conferences, and we were watching like another one of these like up-tempo running attack lectures, and he said, you know, when these linebackers start to get down to 210, 215, when they start to get smaller, now all of a sudden you're going to start getting what we see now, which are these tight end fullback hybrids, and, you know, getting those extra hybrid players in there that can have a size advantage against linebackers and spring, you know, these big rushing totals. A lot of them are coming from, like you said, chunk plays. Just like, yeah, all of a sudden it's like, oh, you and I could get 10 yards on this play. There's so much open field. So I feel like it's another quirk in the adjustment. Then of course we'll see the pendulum swing the other way. They'll figure out how to stop the run. Passing will dominate again. I don't know how fast these trends move. That's just sort of where I see it from my seat.
Well, no, I agree with that. I totally get what you're saying. But at the same time, Luke Falk threw for 600 yards for Washington State yesterday, and nobody's mentioned that. Did you even know that before I just told you that?
Yes. No, I didn't. Not 600. Jesus.
I honestly had not heard about that until I was just looking at it right now online. I was looking at the leaders from yesterday, and there's Luke Falk with 600 yards passing. I was like, nobody had mentioned that to me. That seems like, you know, it's a big number to just fall by the wayside. I mean, I know Washington State lost that game, but still, 600 yards.
Was it because Halliday went for 700?
Like, not yesterday.
Not yesterday, yeah, obviously.
But no, maybe. But still, I mean, how many 600-yard passing games do we see?
Jeez. And they lost.
And they lost by 21.
Like, and let's go ahead and jump to that. In a losing effort, Tevin Coleman. Man, that guy is playing well. I saw one person make the argument, Tevin Coleman's probably not going to win the Heisman. He is starting to get on some Heisman Watch ballots from some of us at CBSSports.com. But is it possible that he might be playing better than anybody else in the country? Like, in terms of his job and just doing his job and doing it really, really well?
Yeah, I mean, when you consider what he's facing every week.
That's what I'm saying. The fact that, like, at least Marcus Mariota has a 1,000-yard rusher in Royce Freeman in the backfield with him, and great passing options, and, you know, Hamani Stevens even on the offensive line. But nah, this is Tevin Coleman and Xander Diamont, a.k.a. this is Tevin Coleman every down trying to get a yard.
No, it's, I mean, he is, like, facing like 8 and 9 man fronts every freaking week, because every defense is no defense is scared of Indiana doing anything else except for Tevin Coleman. And even though they do this every week, he's putting up 200 yards a week. He's at 1900 right now. He's going to finish the year with 2000 yards unless something crazy happens next week against Purdue. So yeah, I think he deserves to be a Heisman finalist simply just not just because of his numbers, but when you consider the situation he's in and he's putting up these numbers. But it's just, I don't know, I'm not going to argue whether it's right or wrong, but it's just the way things work. If you're on a team that is, you know, 4 or 3 and 8 like Indiana is, you're not getting any Heisman consideration unless you put up the most ridiculous numbers anybody's ever seen. And in a year like this, where we're just talking about, where so many running backs are having big years, it doesn't stand out enough to the, you know, common voter who's not really paying attention to Indiana football.
Yeah. When they say I think of the Heisman Trophy winner being, you know, the best player in college. How would you define the Heisman Trophy winner?
I would
fanboy MVP. Who's got the most trading cards coming?
I look at it more like, I don't know. I mean, the best player.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like the MVP award in other, like, you know, in the NBA and baseball. It's like, how do you define valuable? Is it valuable to your team or just valuable overall as being the best? So I just think of giving it to the best player. That's the way I look at the Heisman. I think that's what it's for. I don't think it's just for offensive players. I think that's just the easier way for people to vote. And that's why defensive players always get ignored for this award. But I would give it to the best player. And there's a very good argument to make, like we were saying, you know, with what he's facing every week, nobody's having a better season than Tevin Coleman. That argument can be made.
Yeah. Another Heisman contender right now, JT Barrett, Ohio State's quarterback, did not have a very good game against Indiana. This was a game that Indiana was right there in the mix for a while, but then Jalen Marshall, who had a couple of brutal mistakes against Minnesota, really seemed to redeem himself and played great. He was sort of the star for me for Ohio State, and really, you know, not necessarily because Marshall still has a lot of development and can be a big-time player here in the next couple years, but just the story that even when Barrett, a player who had to shoulder all the offensive responsibility at times, isn't playing so well. The fact that Marshall stepped up and the final score, 42-27, looks so much better, big picture, for Ohio State's resume than, you know, a 35-27. Just like even one less touchdown would have made this look a little bit more of what the game felt like, which was a poor performance for the Buckeyes, don't you think?
Yeah, and it was 42-20 in the fourth quarter until, with like a minute left, Tevin Coleman busted off a 50-yard touchdown run. So there's Tevin Coleman.
He does that, yeah.
Yeah, it just happened. So it was only a 15-point. But, yeah, it was bad the first half. It's Ohio State, you kind of feel like it, you know, it as happens to a lot of teams against bad teams with rivalry games looming, it got caught, you know, kind of just sleeping its way through the first half and finally realized in the second half, it's like, oh, you know what, we've got quite a bit on the line here, don't we? So they made it look better than it really was, but I'm not holding it too much against them. JT Barrett, you said, didn't have his greatest game, but he still finished the day with 4 total touchdowns and 380 total yards. So it's like, if that's your bad day, I'll take it.
The 2 turnovers, they were both early turnovers, right?
Yeah, they were first half interceptions.
Yeah, then he took care of the ball after that. But Ohio State has the game against Michigan. They clinched the Big Ten East officially with this victory against the Hoosiers. And, you know, the things that Ohio State can control are that. You beat Michigan, you go to Indianapolis, you put up a good performance, and I think for Ohio State, you'd rather see Wisconsin than Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to make it to the college football playoff, well, I don't know. The committee loves Minnesota.
Yeah, it does. I think you've already proven you could beat Minnesota, so that, you know, you'd probably rather see them there, especially on a neutral site where you're not in Minneapolis in the early morning freezing your butt off in some really cold weather. But no, I think Wisconsin will be the much tougher test if Wisconsin is the team that ends up getting there. But like you said, it would look better to the selection committee to beat Wisconsin for the Big Ten title than it would be to Minnesota, even though they are some Minnesota homers in that committee.
Minnesota did make the committee look smart by going on the road and beating Nebraska. Minnesota, more than a touchdown underdog in this spot, wins 28-24. Nebraska led 21-7 at halftime, Tom. And this is a bad loss for Bo Pelini.
Yeah, he's it must be mid to late November because there's all the talk about Bo Pelini getting fired all of a sudden. 2 weeks ago, Nebraska's 8-1, ranked in the top 15 by the selection committee. Everything's great. And now two losses where it's not looking, the defense has gotten beat up pretty good the last few weeks. And now, you know, everybody wants to fire Pelini again. And it'll be interesting to see how it goes down there, because if they lose again this week, they've got Iowa, you know, in their Thanksgiving matchup. It could get pretty ugly there.
Well, at 8-1, like you said, it seemed as though this was not going to be another 9-4 season, and now
it's looking like a 9-4 season.
Yeah. It is a tough spot for Pelini. What'd you take away from Minnesota, who not only got this done but did it with David Cobb on the sideline for most of the second half?
Yeah, no, I guess Minnesota's better than I wanted to give it credit for, because like I was dogging it for still being ranked by the committee last week. But yeah, it's a solid team. And Cobb, you know, he was out, but they have the depth. They just haven't had to use it. Danelle Kirkwood has, you know, had plenty of carries in his career at Minnesota. He's been there. Leidner had a big game rushing the ball. He went over 111 yards for two touchdowns. He wasn't very good throwing it, but he never really is.
He had some third down throws to Max Williams, though, with an extra X for cool. He was, that was what killed me about Nebraska's performance, because in a lot of ways, everything was lined up perfectly. And then there were just, you know, almost, you know, Minnesota has a little bit of Florida State in them. I don't know if you can say that for anything else other than Minnesota, even in these games where Minnesota's lost, obviously Florida State has won. But like, even in the Ohio State game, you're like, dang, how did they just complete that 3rd and 8? There's nothing on this drive that makes me think that they're going to complete that third. Oh, they just completed that 3rd and 8.
Huh. Yeah, I'm always somewhat surprised when Minnesota completes a pass. It's like every one of them, I'm like, huh, didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I'm befuddled and amused. I'm like, all right, okay, there we go.
Look at these golfers throwing the ball through the air.
So Minnesota now, I mean, wild spot for the Gophers to be in, as we have enjoyed their ride over the last couple weeks. But now they play Wisconsin. Winner goes to Indianapolis. I favor Wisconsin. I am not necessarily nervous about that Iowa result, because I'm just still not really sure what to think of Iowa ever. Iowa was playing at home, and they made it interesting at the end. I missed some of the beginning of this game. What was your sort of takeaway from the Hawkeyes, and is there any reason to lay off pushing the Badgers as not only a Big Ten West favorite, but as a team that could give Ohio State at least like a very good game?
Oh, Wisconsin could give Ohio State a run. Don't get it twisted. Wisconsin could give Ohio State a really tough time. But my biggest takeaway from the Iowa game, and it's a rivalry game. Two teams don't like each other much, and it was in Iowa City. So they won, and it was on the road, and it was a lot tougher than maybe some people would have. I thought Wisconsin was going to, you know, put them away, based on what Minnesota had done to Iowa a few weeks ago. I thought Wisconsin was going to be able to run all over them, and Wisconsin did rush for 266 yards. It's just Iowa, just that strange team. Some weeks it's good, some weeks it's bad. And yesterday it was a good team. It just wasn't good enough to beat Wisconsin. But Jake Rudock had a good game. He threw for over 300 yards and two touchdowns. Mark Weissman Wisconsin did a good job of limiting Iowa's rushing attack. It was strange to see Iowa moving the ball so effectively through the air and not really getting anything going on the ground. So you have to give Wisconsin's defense some credit there. That bodes well going forward. And then Melvin Gordon, just, you know, he got off to a very slow start in this game. I think he had, 39 yards in the first half?
Yep.
And then he finished with 200.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he started the second half with an 88-yard run, in which he didn't score a touchdown, by the way. It's very hard to pick up 88 yards on a single play and not score, but Melvin Gordon managed to do it because he's just that damn good. And Tanner McAvoy, I think that's one of the things, too. Joel Stavi, the quarterback situation at Wisconsin, has finally kind of settled itself.
They're both playing, but at least the rotation and the roles have settled.
Yeah, Stavi is playing. You know, he's coming. He completed 11 of his 14 passes. No touchdowns or no interceptions, but, you know, just solid, steady, moving the ball off play action. Melvin Gordon sets everything up. And then they bring in McAvoy as that change of pace at quarterback to go with a little, you know, read option type stuff. And McAvoy has been playing very well. He rushed for 62 yards and had a 45-yarder yesterday. Busted a big one for the touchdown. So there's just Melvin Gordon is still the show on that offense, but there's more of a balance to it in recent weeks, which is what I think is making Wisconsin so dangerous right now, along with a defense that is just playing better and better every week.
Yeah, when Melvin Gordon was the star and also the only legitimate threat, that's when we saw Western Illinois putting 13 people in the box and actually having some success. Western Illinois having success slowing
for
Wisconsin. Yeah, for a half. But I was using that as an example compared to where we are now, which is going up against Nebraska and running for 400 yards.
Yeah, Iowa did really well, like I said, for the first half, slowing down Melvin Gordon yesterday, and then the adjustments were made, and the giant offensive linemen start leaning on you and you wear out.
The beer and cheese inflated men barreling down the field. Bruh!
They had some energy brats at halftime.
Yeah.
Just put it on them.
All right, last little Big Ten note. We got ourselves a headline from Michigan's interim athletic director. Brady Hoquatch seemed to be on before the game started. Then Maryland gets a 23-16 win in the Big House. This is you did not need to add any more weight to the pressure that is going to be on for this Michigan-Ohio State game. Even though I don't think Michigan fans are expecting a win, there's just still something about that last stand. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, for sure. I mean, if you're a Michigan fan, this season has been terrible.
Yeah.
But what better way to finish your year than beating Ohio State and killing Ohio State's playoff hopes?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I really at this point, I think Brady Hoke, it's a foregone conclusion that he will be gone. And I don't think a win over Ohio State or getting to a bowl game changes that. But still, I mean, it'd be a nice little bow on a turd of a season to finish the year by beating Ohio State.
To get to six wins because the team, even if Brady Hoke's not there, it's going to help this team. It's going to help some of those young players to get the 15 extra practices. You know,
yeah.
And this is something, this is a wild, wild time for Michigan. Now we will see what the timetable is. I too expect things to happen. But Tom, how about Maryland's first year in the Big Ten?
Surprising.
Yeah.
Very, I mean, pleasantly so. I did not expect them to at worst, they're going to finish 4-4 in conference play, which is not what I was expecting. But, I mean, they've gotten some nice wins. Yeah, Indiana, okay, but the win over Iowa was nice. A nice win on the road against Penn State, and now a win on the road against Michigan. Now, yeah, when it comes to playing the Ohio States, Wisconsins, and the Michigan States of the world, they've struggled quite a bit, but that's pretty much, that's just makes you, I think, a real Big Ten member when you're one of the middling teams getting beat up by the good teams, but picking up some nice road wins that maybe weren't expected. It's good for them, I think. It's been, if you're a Maryland fan, you have to be pretty damn pleased with what you've seen this season, especially, you know, with injuries of late to guys like Stephon Diggs and not really having a great quarterback situation. But you've come into a conference and you're going 7-4. You're probably going to finish 8-4 the way Rutgers has been playing lately. You'd have to think Maryland's a favorite there. It's at home, so it's a nice season for Maryland.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I too think Maryland will be favored. If Maryland beats Rutgers, then to just look at it from the big picture, this Maryland team, which does not do anything great, There's not one thing. Like, they've got players like, you know, Stephon Diggs has been hurt. He's been out. Will Likely, the defensive back, he can break out like a big play, interception return, punt return. They've got talented players that can create individual big plays, but there is very, very little that Maryland has done consistently well or consistently bad. And so the fact that this very middling team could be 8-4 with a 5-3 record in Big Ten play, that is something to be proud of. I know that Randy Edsall is a figure that he's not polarizing, because I don't think anyone necessarily...
No, I don't think anyone hates Randy
Edsall. Yeah, but I think he is... A lot of people aren't sure how they feel about Randy Edsall.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way I would figure, at least the way my personal feelings about Edsall are, I've always felt like, you know, I wasn't so I understood the way that things went when he was at UConn and they went to the Sugar Bowl and he became like a hot coaching name. But that UConn team that went to the Sugar Bowl really wasn't very good. It was just in a very bad Big East conference.
That was when Oklahoma steamrolled him.
Yeah, I just feel like Edsall's he's a good coach. He's not like, you know, an elite coach. He's nowhere near that level, but there are plenty of worse options out there. Trust me, just look around the Big Ten. I can name a few for you. It's your first year in the Big Ten, and right now the odds are you're going to finish not only ahead of just Rutgers and Indiana, which might have been expected, but you're ahead of Michigan and Penn State in the standings.
Yeah, look, you are behind Ohio State.
And you're
Michigan
in the
State.
Hard division.
Yeah.
you're in the division everybody just assumed was going to be the really difficult one, and you're about to finish in third place in that division.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Really, really nice. All right. You know what kind of week 13 was? We just spent almost more than a third of the podcast talking about the Big Ten. But it was
Big Ten bias.
It was a big it was a big week for the Big Ten. I think most of the other power conferences mostly have
We should spend a half hour talking about the SEC and its FCS-a-thon this weekend.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? We're not even going to the SEC next. We are going out to the Pac-12. UCLA, I thought this was the most surprising result of the day. I had 10 confidence points on USC to cover the number. I had picked the Trojans to win. I thought that Leonard Williams and the USC defensive front was going to be able to get after Brett Hundley. I thought that offensively they were going to spread the ball around, use Nelson Agholor, and man, the USC offensive line was beasted the entire game. It was not even close. Cody Kessler never had time to look down the field. Even the rushing game, Buck Allen, Justin Davis, neither of them were dominant at any time. And so it was just all in all a beat 'em down for the Bruins. And in my best, you know, from my seat, another solid win. And now this makes it three victories in a row without having the wild, erratic performance that we've seen. Pretty impressed with UCLA right now. Obviously, very disappointed in the Trojans.
Yeah, I think the UCLA team that we all expected to see this year is actually now here.
Yeah,
I mean,
thanks for showing up, guys.
Yeah, it's good timing. It's strange. It was, yeah, I thought this game was going to be a lot closer and more competitive than it was. But like you said, UCLA pretty much just dominated this thing. Yeah, it started off poorly for the Bruins when Hundley threw that pick six. But after that, I mean, USC's offense only finished with 276 yards. It only scored two touchdowns on its own. It's averaged 1.9 yards a carry in the ground game. It was a very, very bad day for USC's offense, and it was UCLA defense causing it. It wasn't just poor execution by the Trojans. It was just getting beat by the Bruins and getting beat repeatedly. So, yeah, we've talked about it. You know, you never really know which USC team is going to show up. And I thought the good team was going to show up yesterday, and maybe it did. And UCLA is just that much better. Who knows? But the Bruins are definitely, I still think they're kind of overranked, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But
there's not other teams. This is where I'm at now. There are a bunch of teams that probably don't match the number that's beside their name, but I can't come up with a lot of teams below them that deserve to be better.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's like, I think they kind of deserve it at this point, even though I still don't feel that they're really a top 10 team in the country right now.
Right. And I think that's where after about number 6 or 7 in the country, from there all the way down to like 22, 23, around there, you could probably jumble those up. Or if any of those teams played each other on a neutral field, anything would happen.
Yeah. It's, I mean, they're playing well at the right time. And now it's, you have to look at this because odds are they're going to, you know, they're going to be playing Oregon for a Pac-12 title game, and they might be able to beat them.
That is one thing, especially with the way that they were able to dominate USC's offensive line. Now, Oregon's offensive line, Hronis Grasu, has a boot, air cast, a little scooter. He's wheeling around on the sideline, cracking jokes. Everything's all good when you're playing against Colorado. Hamani Stevens, a very good offensive lineman, moved over to center. That seemed to be working well, better than freshman Doug Bennett playing at center with Mariota. Pretty clean game for the Ducks altogether, but I am with you. The way UCLA's defense looked against USC, if they get another shot, and UCLA has, how about this? UCLA against Stanford, Stanford now bowl eligible after a win against Cal. Main note here, Ty Montgomery leaves the game, possible shoulder arm injury. He is questionable for the week. If he doesn't play, then this is about everything setting up for the Bruins.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, another thing too you have to consider, it's no knock on Oregon because Oregon is as good as it's ranking and it's played that well, but UCLA is also going to be far more battle-tested if it gets to the Pac-12 title game, because if you look at just the divisions, I don't think it's been talked about enough just how mediocre the Pac-12 North has been.
It's been worse than the ACC Coastal.
Oregon is awesome. Yeah. Oregon is great, but Stanford is the only other team that doesn't have a losing record in conference this year, and it's at 4-4. And you know, Washington's 3-5, Cal's 3-6, Oregon State's 2-6, Washington State's 2. It's a very bad division, and you have to wonder if that could end up hurting Oregon simply because it hasn't really had any major huge games yet.
Who do you think? All right, so UCLA. If UCLA beats Stanford, that's it. If UCLA loses, winner of Arizona State, Arizona wins the Pac-12 South. Who do you think out of those two? Because do we agree UCLA is probably, out of those three teams, the toughest matchup for Oregon?
Yes.
Who do you think would favor, who do you think has the best chance against Oregon between Arizona State and Arizona?
Arizona State, but, I mean, you can't really put a factor onto that horseshoe Arizona has still. I think Arizona State's better than Arizona, but I don't know for sure now because Arizona kind of stuck it to me a little bit this weekend by putting a nice little quality beat down on a good Utah defense. So I really don't know still what to make of the Wildcats or just how good they are, but I can't help but feel that Arizona State's still the better team and would still be a worse matchup for Oregon than the Wildcats would be. Although we've already seen Arizona beat Oregon this year. It's just, nah. Can they do it twice?
Well, I mean, we've got Anu Solomon leaves the game. Nobody says what his injury is. He's got a boot on, and he's got a disguise on.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's right.
And Jesse Scroggins, former USC transfer, comes into the game. But he, for the most part, was handing the ball off. Big game for Nick Wilson, who's had a couple big games for Arizona and played well in the upset against Oregon. You know, it was messy conditions. It was cold. They were serving chicken broth and hot chocolate on the sidelines. And it was like the Oklahoma game. It was just crappy conditions. And Arizona said, all right, well, we're just going to run the ball a whole bunch. And because they were creating so much pressure on Travis Wilson and shutting down Devontae Booker, I mean, they were just not respecting the idea that Utah could complete a pass of beyond 5 yards. And Utah couldn't.
And it worked.
Yeah, and it worked really, really well. I'm really surprised more people hadn't tried doing that.
Yeah, that was that Utah offense. It gets ugly sometimes, except for Devontae Booker.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and get over to, actually, before we go to the SEC, before we talk about Arkansas and Burt and all that good stuff, Arkansas's going to have an extended season, Tom. Did you know that? They have a bowl game coming.
I had not heard.
Which also means that, you know, maybe you want to celebrate. Maybe you want to make a website or do something to celebrate this extra extended season. Arkansas returned to the postseason. If you wanted to create such a website, I would suggest using Squarespace. Don't you think? That'd be a good option.
I think you should. I think you should start BurtForever.com.
This is a reminder that today's podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio, BurtLife.com, if it is available. You know, that domain name could be really big for you. This could be a good time.
I want to get Burt Life tattooed on my chest.
Get Burt Life tattooed on your chest. Get pictures of it posted on your Squarespace designed site. Squarespace has been redesigned with the new Squarespace 7 interface, including integration of Google Apps, partnership with Getty Images for all of your Brett Bielema photos, 15 new templates and cover pages. It starts at just $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Start a free trial, though, with no credit card required, and start building your website today. But when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, please make sure to use the offer code FUN, F-U-N. We've already heard from some of our listeners that are doing this. They love it. They use that FUN offer code to get 10% off and to show their support and your support for the Ion College Football Podcast. We thank Squarespace for their support. Squarespace, start here, go anywhere.
Go to BurtLife.com.
BurtLife. So the Arizona Razor Badgers are looking. We talked last week about how it was really sort of fun to see this offensive line get out there throwing blocks. Just the Arkansas offense leaning into teams. But man, this was a beatdown on Ole Miss in all phases of the game. Trey Flowers has a huge game for Arkansas on the defensive line. And the defense in general played great against an Ole Miss offense that admittedly has been sputtering and downgraded over the last couple weeks. I walk away from here very, very impressed with the Razorbacks as they've already gotten bowl eligibility. And now this team that we no longer have to call the best bad team in football since they're a bowl team, that's nice, will finish the season in the biggest spotlight that the SEC will have. That's right, Missouri-Arkansas. No one's watching the Egg Bowl. No one's watching the Iron Bowl. Missouri-Arkansas is going to be where it's at. How do you think the Razorbacks will play in this game that will decide the SEC East champion?
First of all, I think people will be watching the Iron Bowl.
I'm kidding. Yeah, yes.
But, I can't help but think Arkansas is going to beat Missouri. Can you?
I don't know. I've got some thoughts on Missouri that I finally put together here in a little bit. I'll just go ahead and tell you. So they had five turnovers in that loss to Georgia, the game where everybody basically like that Georgia loss is burned so deeply in everyone's mind because it was right after the Todd Gurley suspension. And, you know, it was at the height of everything else, and it was such a brutal loss. But since then, they had five turnovers in the loss to Georgia and only two turnovers in the five games since. So they've been taking care of the ball, no turnovers against Tennessee. Missouri is not great offensively, but when they don't turn the ball over, they've got just enough of a rushing attack with Marcus Murphy and Russell Hansborough and just enough talent still at wide receivers. You don't have the same freaks that you had last year, but Bud Sasser is still pretty good. And it's like as the margin of error is so thin. It's like we've talked about Duke in the ACC Coastal. The margin of error is so, so thin, but when you don't turn the ball over and you do some tiny things better, play well in special teams, then you're going to end up winning some games even if you don't dominate them. And it just seems like that's what Missouri is doing right now.
Where I come at it from is, what's Missouri's strength in your mind? What's the strongest part of that team?
Defensive line.
Exactly.
Marcus
what's
Golden,
the strength of
Shane
Arkansas's
Ray,
team?
Offensive line.
Which is bigger than any team in the NFL on an average size.
No it's way.
It's the biggest offensive line in football. It is bigger than any NFL offensive line. So I feel like Arkansas is going to be able to at least somewhat neutralize that Missouri defensive line.
Yeah.
And if you do that, I think you beat Missouri. That's as simple as the way I'm looking at it. I think Arkansas's offensive line will not completely stop it because there's too much talent on that defensive line to completely shut it out, but we'll slow it down enough. And if it comes down to which offense I trust more at this point, I have to trust Arkansas's offense more than I trust Missouri's because, I mean, I'm still not a huge believer in Matty Mock. And then another factor, this game was on the road.
Yeah.
I would feel much better about Missouri because Missouri has won like, what, 8 or 9 straight games on the road so far?
Yeah.
I mean, it's beaten Toledo, South Carolina, Florida, Texas A&M, Tennessee all on the road this year, but it's lost twice at home. You mentioned the Georgia game, and then there's that Indiana loss. So I think this game being in Columbia is actually better for Arkansas than being at home. So
Jerry's argument was, our colleague Jerry Hinnan's argument was that because Arkansas has broken through and basically checked all these boxes, Missouri will have more to play for. You're still going because, see, I don't buy that. I don't buy that either, man. Arkansas has been losing so much. There's now, no way they let up off the gas now.
No, man. Yeah. No, they are not letting up.
This is Burt.
They want to finish the regular season with 3 straight wins in the SEC. And they're going to try to shut out Missouri, too. That's what they're going to be playing for. They don't want to give up points at this point. 3 straight weeks against ranked opponents without allowing a point. That's what they have to play for.
You know, you remember when Wisconsin was beating teams like 50-0?
Yes, it's a Burt Bielma team.
Yeah.
They're feeling good. They're feeling birdie.
Hitting on Burt's 16, baby. Here we go.
Burt's got his groove. Burt's trying to put up 100 on Mizzou next week.
Alabama got pretty banged up in the Western Carolina win. I told y'all not to sleep on the Catamounts that are actually playing in the FCS playoffs after years and years of ineptitude in football. But obviously Alabama, much bigger, much better. But Cam Robinson, left tackle, has had some injury issues. He gets a little bit banged up. A'shaun Robinson on the defensive line, I would argue, is very, very concerning that he might not be there. But even with all these injuries, there's something about the way that Auburn played against Samford, something about the way Auburn has looked in the last couple weeks. I still favor Alabama, and I'm not really that worried about it.
Yeah, I have a hard time disagreeing with that, especially because it's in Tuscaloosa. So, yeah.
I mean, they've been so good. Reggie Ragland, Trey DePriest, A'shaun Robinson, that whole defensive front plays so well against the run. And Nick Marshall did not have a great game against Samford. In general, Auburn didn't have a great game against Samford. They did not come out looking focused. Cameron Artis Payne is the best thing going for that team right now. And outside of that, there's not a lot of consistency. Duke Williams having trouble staying healthy. And even if he was healthy, I don't know if the passing attack is fluid enough right now that he would be able to make a huge difference. I am favoring, you know, Alabama and Mississippi State without much hesitation heading into the Iron Bowl Egg Bowl.
Yeah, although I'm a little more trepidatious about Mississippi State than I am Alabama.
Just based on it being an Oxford and revenge game and all those things?
Yeah, I mean, because I don't think Ole Miss is going to turn the ball over 6 times again like it did against Arkansas.
You don't?
No. I'm willing to bet that they will have less than 6 turnovers.
Man, that was brutal. Like 14, mm-hmm. the 100-yard interception return by Rohan Gaines is, I think it was like 17-0 or 20-0 at that point.
And one of the two.
You're about to make this an interesting game, and then you're out. Yeah. All right. Wake Forest and Virginia Tech.
Oh, why?
I've gotten some classics. Between Stanford, Utah going to overtime at 7, the only way it could have been bested was with Wake Forest and Virginia Tech. First game since 2005 to go to overtime after a scoreless regulation. Wake Forest at least won because it had several chances to win the game in regulation. But Virginia Tech's offense is woeful, and now it sets up this very, very awkward game between Virginia Tech and Virginia. The Hokies, a 1-point favorite as it has opened, with the 5-6 Hokies against the 5-6 Cavaliers. Winner goes to a bowl game. Loser has no postseason. It's not going to be fun.
You know, you phrased that a little differently in the campfire yesterday.
What did I say?
In the campfire yesterday, you said winner goes to a bowl game, loser fires its coach.
Loser fires its coach.
So I want to know, I mean, if Virginia Tech loses, do you think Beamer's gone?
I've said for a couple weeks, and I'm starting to get uncomfortable because when I said it, I thought that we wouldn't reach this point. But I said, I think that Beamer, for everything that he means to that program, and then maybe more importantly, by looking at the team, where literally like over 50 to 75% of the scoring on offense has come from freshmen running backs, freshmen tight ends, freshmen mm-hmm. wide receivers. And Beamer and all the coaches have said, you know, we are a very, very good team, but we are young. You know, we are still getting better. The Hokies are doing pretty well in this recruiting cycle. So because they've been able to point towards the future, I've always said, as long as the bowl streak doesn't snap, then I don't see the Frank Beamer, you know, stepping down, being removed, anything like that. Now, if this bowl streak, which has lasted for 22 years and lasted other years of mediocrity and disappointing seasons, if that snaps and that's enough for Virginia Tech fans to start considering doing what was previously unthinkable or unspeakable, then things could get really, really, really awkward. I think Mike London can only save his job with a win. I think Beamer could only lose his job with a loss.
Now, if Beamer's gone, you would assume Bud Foster takes it?
Not necessarily.
See, that's what I'm thinking too, because that would be an interesting gig to see what happens if there is an opening there, to see who Virginia Tech could attract and which kind of, you know what I mean?
I mean, the awkward thing is that you've got another Beamer on staff mm-hmm. who's done, and I don't know what, you know, his plan is or whether there is like timing or anything else like that. Bud Foster has had opportunities to go take jobs elsewhere and has decided to stay in Blacksburg, has been there forever. Now, Shane Beamer has gone to South Carolina to be an assistant. You know, he's done the SEC thing. He's done the go out, learn the world, and come home type thing. He's done LeBron. He's gone to Miami. He's come back to Cleveland. And
it's going just as well as it is for LeBron.
Yes, it is. So I don't know. It'll be interesting because I thought that if Beamer, you know, maybe Beamer has two or three more seasons, you know, then there's a transition period. It is going to be awkward whenever that transition happens.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting situation to keep. It's one of those things I've been wondering. It'll be fun to keep tabs on what happens there, because it would be weird to see Frank Beamer not coaching Virginia Tech, because we wouldn't get to make all the Beamer ball jokes anymore.
Yeah. I mean, if Mike London loses his job, that's good news for Virginia Tech and Beamer, because London's been kicking their ass in state recruiting more so than Virginia Tech is used to having to mm-hmm. deal with Virginia. So this could be, this is, I'm not going to say it all rides on this game.
It all rides on this game.
But it all rides on this Commonwealth Cup. Again, Virginia Tech opened as a 1-point favorite.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, Louisville, Notre Dame. What is the biggest concern for Notre Dame fans right now? Is it the defense? Is it your quarterback? Or is it Brian Kelly and just overall uneasiness about, not that he is a candidate for other jobs, but just that it just doesn't seem like a fun relationship right now?
I think the concern, I don't have any concerns about Brian Kelly. I feel like if he ever leaves Notre Dame, it's going to be for the NFL. He's not going to be leaving for another college job. But everything else, I think it's pretty much the same. Your defense is just battered. And it's
six games now giving up over 30 points, right?
Yeah. So there's like dealing with a ton of injuries, and the guys that, you know, the depth really isn't there that are able to come in and play at the same level it had been playing earlier this year. And Everett Golson is just still too loose with the football. It's, you know, nothing has changed. It's just they're not winning now. It's they're playing the last few weeks. They've had a step up in caliber of opponents, and they're getting caught. They're making the same mistakes they made earlier this year, but they were able to get away with it. They're not going to now. And I mean, before this season started, I had Notre Dame pegged as an 8-4, 7-5 team after, you know, they lost the players to the academic suspensions. This is what I figured their destiny would be. Now, granted, it's taken a much different path to that finish line that I thought it was going to, but
we're here.
Yeah, we're here. And I don't know. I mean, personally, as a Notre Dame fan, this is what I expected, so I'm not incredibly worried about it. I'm just kind of upset, or not upset, but disappointed, just when you think of where it was a few weeks ago and how close they were to beating Florida State and then where it's gone from there. It sucks, but, you know.
The first half against Florida State was awesome. if you're if you're a Notre Dame fan. You're like, oh my gosh, this team really can compete for national titles. Here we go. And
I mean, that was the best game they've played as a team this year, and they lost.
Lost asterisks, depending on who you ask.
Yeah, they lost.
All right, let's bowl eligibility watch. We're just going to run through some of these games. I will tell you the situation, and you tell me what you think. Virginia at Virginia Tech, both teams need a win to get bowl eligible. We just talked about it. Who do you think wins?
Virginia Tech.
Illinois at Northwestern. Winner in the rivalry game goes to a bowl game. Tim Beckman, does he save his job regardless of the result? Is his job still on the line if Illinois wins? And what is, you know, this is back to what would Illinois fans want in this situation?
Well, I can't speak for all of them, but I think Northwestern wins, and I think it's all a moot point. Here's the thing. Illinois is now, you know, won five games, but it hasn't really played a good game yet this year. You know what I mean? It hasn't played a solid football game all year. It's just happened to win five times. And Northwestern, while it's not a great team and it was off to a very bad start early in the year, is actually one of those teams that is improving and playing better as the season goes along. Now, the question there is Trevor Siemian's injury and whether he's going to be able to play or not. But I think with the game at Evanston and Northwestern's a 9-point favorite, I think that's pretty indicative of both of these teams. I expect Northwestern to win.
This is not week 14, but actually week 15, Oklahoma State at Oklahoma. Oklahoma with a win is a 6-6 bowl team. With a loss is not bowling under Mike Gundy for the first time in a while. What's your thought there?
Oklahoma, although it depends also. I mean, both these teams have quarterback situations right now.
Yeah.
But I think Trevor Knight would be back by then, and I think that would give Oklahoma quite an edge.
Pittsburgh goes on the road to play Miami, gave Miami about all it could take last year in up in Heinz Field, 41-31 Miami victory. The Hurricanes just laid an egg up in Charlottesville at Virginia in the game that actually put Virginia in a position to potentially get a win and bowl eligibility. Do you think the Panthers can pull off the upset and beat Miami? It would take another sleepwalking Miami performance. Do you think it happens?
I have no idea. I mean, I have no idea. Both of these teams, I don't know.
James Conner against Duke Johnson. That's a reason to watch that one.
It's going to be which team screws it up less.
Speaking of which team screws it up less, Tennessee at Vanderbilt. Tennessee should be favored, probably going to get the victory. Yeah.
Tennessee.
Kentucky going to play Louisville. This Louisville team that even with Will Gardner out, Reggie Bonifon, man, I know Notre Dame's defense is struggling, but he looks pretty good. Obviously, leaning on Devontae Parker is always a good plan. Do you think that Big Blue Nation will be celebrating bowl season, or does Louisville protect home field?
Listen, I picked Kentucky as my SEC East champion.
Oh yeah, like
2 months ago on this podcast, and that fell apart quickly. But damn it, Kentucky's beaten Louisville, and Kentucky's going bowling.
BYU already bowling, playing at Cal. Cal needs a victory. I was surprised at Stanford dominance in that game. Didn't get to watch a ton, just sort of tracking
Cal's defense
it as it
is just
goes.
That bad.
Well, and this is the other thing. Cal turned the ball over five times and committed 12 penalties that totaled over 100 yards.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of penalties.
That's a lot of penalties and turnovers. That is not a way to win a game. Do you think that they are able to bounce back and beat BYU to get to the postseason?
Yeah, I'm going to say they do it.
Do you think Baylor is going to protect home field against Kansas State? Kansas State 26-20 winners at West Virginia last Thursday. Not an overwhelmingly amazing performance by the Wildcats, in my opinion. You've definitely had some help, but I don't know. It wasn't like a typical Kansas State victory, but they won, and I would expect them to fight with Baylor. You had closer eyes on Baylor, Oklahoma State than I did. What are you feeling about the Bears right now?
They're the same team that you've seen all year, pretty much. And it was closer than I thought it was going to be against Oklahoma State, considering they were playing a freshman who they'd burned their red shirt at quarterback just for that game.
So sad. Poor Mason Rudolph.
But the weather was pretty crappy. I mean, it was raining pretty much most of the night, which kind of, I think, affected Baylor's game plan. They weren't really aired out as much as they probably would have liked. They stuck more to the ground attack, and I think that kind of helped keep it close-ish, although it really wasn't a close game. But, Baylor's still fine. I mean, I wouldn't take too much out of the win over Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State is a team that is still going south fast.
Texas and TCU playing on Thanksgiving night in Austin. I'm very excited for this one. Tom, where's your head at? What are you thinking happens here?
Listen, I'm making a bold proclamation right now, right here, Rewind. For the people that have listened this long, they deserve it. There's been all this debate over Baylor-TCU. Baylor beat TCU. TCU's rated higher than Baylor, but blah, 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 blah. They're both losing.
Oh!
Kansas State is going to beat Baylor.
Yes!
Texas is going to beat TCU.
Yes!
They're both going to lose, and then they can still argue about which one's better while neither of them are in the playoff.
Yes! Hot takes right at the 61st minute. Boom!
Boom. Deal with it, world.
I hope
I didn't burn your ears.
I think that Texas wins. Baylor gets to the playoff.
Yeah, well, you know, you can think that if you want.
Who do you think? All right, so Colorado State playing awesome. D Hart has like 14 touchdowns and a big win. Colorado State goes to play at Air Force. Utah State plays at Boise State. Boise State is playing like they want to win this Mountain West title. They're balled at Wyoming, and Jay Ajayi obviously is great, but they don't only have to lean on him anymore. Brian Harsin's offense is really clicking right now. I think that Boise State gets it done and wins this Mountain West title. Do you think that Colorado State has a shot to be able to have things break their way and get a spot in an Access Bowl?
Colorado State beats Air Force. Utah State beats Boise State. Uh-oh!
Uh-oh!
Colorado State's winning the conference.
All right, and final question, the deep thought. Should Hawaii be allowed to play for the Mountain West title if it's already ineligible for the postseason?
It's not going to play for the Mountain West title, but yes. Because bowl eligibility shouldn't have anything to do. If you had the best record in your division of your conference against the same opponents, yes, I don't care what your bowl eligibility says.
Because if Hawaii beats Fresno State, then it might have the tiebreakers necessary if San Diego State loses to San Jose State to be able to win the tiebreakers.
Yeah, no, I understand it's possible. And if it does happen, hell yes, they should be allowed to play and lose to whoever they play from the other division.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
All right, what are you most looking forward to about this final week of full regular season football?
All the rivalry games. I mean, it's one of the best weekends of the year. It's a bunch of teams that hate each other all playing.
I think we're going to see some tight games. I'm going to be loving the underdogs.
You got to love underdogs on rivalry week.
Love the underdogs. Love the under. You know, if you happen to be looking at totals, the under's been doing really well recently. Weather, of course, having a big impact on that, in my opinion. But it should be a lot of fun. And let's add another podcast to the slate this week, Tom. You got room in your schedule?
Sure.
All right. I'll see if we can get Brady Quinn back on the show. I think that could be a lot of fun.
We could talk about rivalries and hating.
Hate. It's hate week, y'all. For Tom
Fernelli. Brady Quinn, who he hates.
For Tom Fernelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.